The Around the NFL Podcast. Doesn't trust men in fedoras.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Happy Tuesday.
We're in the wrong city.
Why? What's up?
If we don't trust men in fedoras.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's a lot of posers walking around the city in fedoras.
Yeah, fedoras, Wes, you own your baldhood, and you've embraced it, and you're pulling it off. But a lot of men aren't comfortable with being having a receding hairline or a bald spot. You know, the old Pete Sampras UFO crop circle.
These aren't the people wearing fedoras.
Well, a lot of people do, though. A lot of them use it to cover up the baldness.
Who are you pointing to, Wes? What subset?
I'm talking to the posers, usually the guys hanging out in West Hollywood with their golden locks of hair underneath a fedora.
How do you know that?
Waiting in line to get into clubs as if there's no other clubs in the city.
Speaking of which, they need to
get into that one club with the line.
Wes has been going to clubs lately.
Stop.
Yeah.
With his new girlfriend. And so you're starting to see a part of the city that none of us, as married old farts, we don't see it. You're in there with a thumping EDM, with the bottle service, with the fedoras. Take us behind the velvet rope.
I went one time, and I'm not happy about it. I did it to be a good boyfriend. I had fun because the Paramore's friends are fun,
yeah.
But that is not my scene, and I can't believe it's really anyone's scene.
Well, it is a lot of people's scene.
Right, especially in L.A., especially people under the age of 40. I'm way too old to be in a club.
Did they get you? Did you do any dancing? Did you buy any bottles for people?
I don't dance.
Put it this way. The one photo that showed up on social media, Wes looked like he was photoshopped into the back of it. Not the most comfortable setting for a Wes character.
No, I'm not at home there.
And that's totally fine. Does this do anything for you?
I don't even think this was played there. It was more like your better have my money.
Well, you like that.
That's
or
good.
Work.
Oh, my God.
It's all that stuff where it's just the same line repeated over and over and over again, and everybody loves dancing to it.
This entire segment, by the way, was brought to you by a conversation. The upper floor thought we needed to start reaching out to some of our younger listeners. Yes.
I don't think they would.
They were like, get Wes to talk about Rihanna.
We need more millennial connection. Huh. There is. There's now six children involved with the four of us heroes. Wes is the lone wolf now in terms of out on the city. So whenever you do have one of these experiences, even if it's because the GF or Paramore, as you call her, takes you there, you just got to report back to us. What's going on out in the streets?
Yeah.
Streets talking. You got to let us know what they're saying.
I don't really have boots on the ground when I'm at these places. I'm more like a wallflower, just sitting back enjoying the show. Drinking a few drinks.
I don't like the assumption that we are forbidden from, going to the same places.
Mark, it's over. Oh. I mean, I don't want to be the one to tell you, but it's just not a good
place. I mean, it feels
over.
A guy
with a wedding band with two kids at home.
Okay, you pegged me. I'm not going to the same places as Wes.
Big show.
I'm not even going to the same places as me.
Big show today. Sponsored, of course, by Mr. Flames Economics Class in The Hague, the Netherlands. Got the Monday Night Football game from Mexico City. Mexicola. I'm very excited to talk about that game because that was an interesting, if not frustrating, experience as a fan. We have some news to get to, including a certain nicotine-loving quarterback out of the Illinois area. I don't know if he actually smokes, but he's associated with it. For the last time, our final stick a fork in him committee gathering. We met earlier today, had the Danish and the coffee and all that good stuff, and we're going to fork some teams, finish out our Stick a Fork series for the 2016 season, and then we're going to preview the three Thanksgiving games. Whoa, Greg.
That's a full meal.
Hubba hubba. Let's get right into it. Sid, a little Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football. They play the games on Monday night, and it's televised. Original lyrics. Yes, at Mexico City, Azteca Stadium. Aztec? Anybody?
Yeah, you're close.
Aztec Stadium?
I like that.
Stadio Azteca.
There you go.
Yeah, which was a very fun environment to watch a game, and it looked like it was a lot of fun to be there. The Houston Texans and Oakland Raiders, a back-and-forth game where the Houston Texans came out of their shell a little bit, looked like a team that was on the verge of winning, had a lead, but the Oakland Raiders woke up from a slumber, and then after a controversial third and fourth down set of downs in the fourth quarter, Derek Carr took the field, and this happened.
He's going to throw left real quick like to Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper, Celeste, touchdown Raiders. 35 yards. The pass was quick. Cooper caught it. He split two defenders off to the races. Touchdown Raiders.
Armando Quintero, Westwood One Sports with the call. That was the game winner. Final score, 27-20. The Oakland Raiders now 8-2. Can you believe it? The Houston Texans, Mark Sessler, a frustrated 6-4 now. And you can understand why.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, to pull back the curtain a bit, we were all texting during the later stages of this game. And I think the Texans off of A, the DeAndre Hopkins situation, which we can get into. But for me, what really got me upset was watching two spots in a row where the Texans were going to go for a critical fourth down late in the game, where the refs seemed to be seeing something completely different than Gruden and every other single person watching this game. That was an unbelievable job by the refs.
Well, it was third and one, right? It was third and one.
Yep.
And a carry where it looked like it was Lamar Miller, correct?
Yep.
Where he got – it looked like he had reached and gotten past the marker. Replays showed that.
It was clear. That one was clear.
And Bill O'Brien, this is the one – you could give him a little flack. He didn't challenge it. That one looked like it could have been overturned. It was pretty obvious. And then they go for it on fourth down, which you got to give – to me, that's some pretty big onions that you're hanging there, because you can kick the field goal.
Tie game.
And go up 3 points at that point. But O'Brien said, you know what, I want to go for this whole thing, either get the touchdown or chew up the clock more before kicking another field goal. And they get the first down. I don't even want to hear it. They got the first down. When he got taken down, the ball carry was past the line, and then he reached, and they again don't spot it. This time it's challenged, and they don't get it.
Well, that's why you can't criticize O'Brien for not challenging on third down, because based on what we just saw a play later, they probably wouldn't have overturned it, because fourth down was almost as clear, if not clearer. O'Brien didn't want to waste the timeout either. He had faith he could get a yard. He also explained after the game he thought they needed touchdowns to beat the Raiders at that point in the game with everyone so tired.
And you know what?
He was right, because his defense couldn't stop him two straight times. Now, you might want to ask Billy, if you thought you needed touchdowns, why are you punting the ball on fourth and five with 3 minutes to go? That was an unbelievable lack of faith in Brock Osweiler, which I get, but you gotta try to win the game. At that point, it was tough to get any stops, and they couldn't get them.
You're not punting to an offense that doesn't know how to perform late-game magic.
Right.
You're punting to the Raiders, who you just felt them coming at you at the second half. Well, they're going to take the top off this thing.
And it's not a lack of onions either, because he just went for fourth down. He went for fourth down early in the second half in a tie game in his own territory. People forget that play was a big-time call by O'Brien, ended up leading to points for the team. So they had guts. I thought they outplayed the Raiders for three quarters plus. It was 297 yards to 120 with 11 minutes left in the game.
Wow.
And then the Raiders did what the Raiders do.
Wes?
The setting played a key factor in this. Playing in Mexico City, you had the laser in Brock Osweiler's eyes. That was
the laser pointers are back, Mark.
That was offset by the poor footing for Raiders wide receivers who were dropping passes. But then the altitude, both defenses were gassed in the fourth quarter. And because the Raiders have a quarterback, they took advantage of that. Jack Del Rio showed a lot of faith in Derek Carr. Bill O'Brien showed very little faith in Brock Osweiler with the game on the line. And I think that was the difference. The Raiders have as Bucky Brooks would say, the Raiders have a truck and the Texans have a trailer.
I mean, and it's at this point, I can't fault Bill O'Brien for not wanting to give everything to Brock Osweiler at the end of the game. And it's the exact opposite for the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders are surging in a way that I don't think, even though we thought they'd be good, their record is they're right there in the AFC.
Let's face it, they got lucky to win this game. They got some help both on the DeAndre Hopkins play on the sideline in the first half and then at the end on the third and fourth down, which, again, I still can't believe how that played out. But at the same time, when you're a team like the Raiders, when you start to get hot and then there's a little bit of juice around you, things seem to work. Mojo, you're a big fan of Mojo,
well,
Greg.
The Texans felt like they won this game. You know, the Bucs felt like they won their game against Oakland. The Ravens felt like they won their game against Oakland. The Chargers felt like they outplayed Oakland. You can go back to about five or six of these Raiders games where it seems like they just pull it out, but they play their best in the fourth quarter. The numbers say it. I mean, Derek Carr, all those throws were on the money. Jalen Richard from the Bayou. I love this guy. They got to get him the ball a little more. Two big-time plays, game-changing plays, the touchdown, and then the big-time call I thought of the entire game was that second down deep throw to Richard. That really that showed a lot of onions.
I know the numbers don't really scream at you, 6.2 yards per attempt. I thought there were some strides from Osweiler here. I thought he was competitive for the most part. This is a far cry from a guy that signed that big contract. But I thought, Wes, and you're shaking your head, but I didn't think he was great and Derek Carr was superior. But I don't think he killed them in this game like he's done in other weeks.
Oh, I can't believe it.
That's fair, but you're setting the bar awfully low.
I am.
And you're overlooking – everybody's overlooking one of the biggest problems with Brock Osweiler. This offense should revolve around playmakers DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller. The passing game should. Instead, because Osweiler can't go downfield and they want to do a ball control offense, the passing game goes through C.J. Fedorowicz and Ryan Griffin, their tight ends.
And Lamar
Will
Miller.
Fuller – had more yards in his first two games than he's had in the last 8 weeks combined.
I think Fedorowicz was targeted 47 times in this game.
That's Brock Osweiler's offense.
Depending on what happens with this team, would you say that Brock Osweiler is a guaranteed week one starter for the next year?
I'm not even ready to say he's a guaranteed week 17 starter. I thought, like you said, Dan, I thought he showed some strides. Then again, there were two throws he threw into the Raiders' chest that if they had caught either one of them, we might think about the game a little differently. You never know. This team might think we got to win some games here if he plays that bad because they have a defense. I mean, they had the Raiders. It was a great game plan. They outcoached the Raiders for three quarters. They had the Raiders stopped. Jadeveon Clowney had about as good a run-stopping game as we've seen anyone have all season.
Your boy, you're making the leap.
Is he making the leap?
I think he's made a leap.
Ask Vince Wilfork if he's made the leap.
What did Wilfork say?
Wilfork told the Monday Night Football crew that not only is he the best defensive player on their team, he would be their best defensive player even if they had J.J. Watt.
That's
crazy.
J.J. Watt's one of the greatest players of all time.
It's an outlandish insult to J.J. Watt.
Will Fork's like text Nate Gruden and be like, hey, I didn't think you were going to tell anyone that. Come on, man. I was just saying that. You know,
I was drunk. Did you guys see the J.J. Watt Players Tribune column?
No.
I refused to read it.
Right up your alley, Dan.
If you need a chuckle.
I thought of you.
Need a chuckle. That's all. I can't get into it anymore.
What are you saying?
Just some of it. I mean,
he's
just
not the new William Faulkner. Or
and as I was on my old high school field watching the children run by with J.J. Watt jerseys and sneakers, I realized that the game has nothing to do with the money, the $100 million contract, or the numbers, or the All Pros, or the MVPs. It's about the kids. I was like, all right. Come back to us, James.
It's always about the kids.
Come back to us, Justin James. All right. That's Monday Night Football. Hey, Sid, how you doing?
I'm good.
What's going on? What's new with you?
Oh, you know, life happened.
You've been having some traumatic things happening.
Yeah, we didn't really touch on it because it was a busy week last week. But as people who follow the show closely know, last Tuesday, 1 week ago today, we had a bit of a technical glitch in the posting of our Tuesday show that led to a little pullback of the curtain.
Yeah, pretty big pullback of the curtain.
Yeah, you know, maybe some expressive language got through the old filter. and so I start getting...
the curtain was burned, thrown out into the street.
It was doused in gasoline and then a mattress thrown at it. So some salty language from the old Zeuser ends up being on the live show. So I start getting tweets because our listeners are nothing if not extremely plugged in, and they want to be in contact with us, which is great. I get a multitude of tweets, more than I've gotten from any show. Hey, bro, you better check out the show. I call Sydney. I say, Sid, we got a problem with the show. Sydney's on the phone leaving the office. She's in her car. And what happened, Sydney?
Well, traffic stopped.
Yeah.
And I did not. And I rammed into the back of somebody else.
Were we on the phone? Or were you texting at this point? Or
no, no.
Let's get through. Let's figure this out.
Well, I got your message at a stoplight and promptly turned around to correct.
Go back to the office to make the edit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And in my distracted state, I turned away for about 3 seconds.
Oh, no.
And there it was.
Wait, so the call was distracted, like your head is
like
in the clouds?
Like my head was in the clouds, yeah.
The same thing, the same exact story happened to me when they called me to come into the office because Aaron Hernandez was involved in something or other. And I suddenly, my mind was in the clouds and I ran over a curb and...
But that's just because you're
what was Aaron Hernandez involved in?
Well, we're not allowed to talk about Aaron Hernandez.
Who? Hey, he said... I certainly feel a little bit responsible. I dropped the F-bomb.
I'd say so.
And then I made the call. But that was all trying to help you at that point.
Right.
So my hands are on some level clean. But
what about the first part? It's
what?
Still, you know.
What, the F-bombs?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
I mean, it's another reminder that it's a positive that no one of even small importance in this building listens to this show. Otherwise, we might have been caught.
So I thought of an idea because I do feel a little bit bad. And not bad enough to pay for your repairs, Sydney, because I am.
I was wondering about that.
I'm a father of two, and I have no money right now.
Likes money too.
Many of
and
us.
I like
Many
money
of us really.
But I had the idea: what if I just throw it out there to the listenership? Some type of GoFundMe. What kind of damages are we talking about to the car?
Well, early estimates are like $4,000, but luckily I've got pretty good insurance.
Oh,
okay. So what? How much are you going to be out of pocket?
I'm going to be out probably $500.
Oh,
okay,
that's not too bad.
How about this, listenership? And this, and we'll throw this maybe in the Greeby and the subreddit. They do such a great job over there. Maybe we can start a little GoFundMe to pay for Sydney's. Is this distasteful?
Oh, I mean, it's.
No.
I'm not sure it complies with corporate law, but again, no one is listening to this show.
Fly Maybe on. Some type of fundraiser for the listenership. Save Sydney, an SOS, Save Our Sydney, to pay for her car expenses.
The way I understand it, millennials ask each other for money all the time.
Wes
we created
is,
apps for that very purpose.
Wes,
right.
I thought the people upstairs talked to you about no more of the anti-millennial screeds.
That's not even anti. I just said they asked each other
totally
for money.
That's just totally ruined the whole Rihanna thing we did before.
You're going to need more electroshock treatment, Wes, if you don't stop.
Anyway. Before I left Tybee, this one girl asked for money so she could go take care of elephants in Alabama or something. I didn't know what was going on.
Sounds like
anyway,
or something.
Sydney. SOS, Save Our Sydney, $500 fundraiser. We'll see what we can do. You know, I'll kick in some money. I feel responsible.
The
majority.
Least you could do is kick in a hearty amount of cash.
Okay.
Fill in the love, guys.
All right, let's do some news.
Scout Tolzain. Scout Tolzain.
Oh, I can't wait for Scout Tolzain to play football again. All right, let's start with the Chicago Bears and their quarterback situation. Jay Cutler expected to miss the rest of the season. The Bears quarterback is believed to have a torn labrum in his throwing shoulder. Rap sheet and Mike Garofalo.
Garofalo.
Reported Tuesday. Uh-huh. Cutler is undergoing a second opinion in hopes the results come out differently. But, Greg Rosenthal, this certainly looks like not just the end of the season for Jay Cutler on a going-nowhere Bears team, but quite obviously the end of Jay Cutler in Chicago, period.
Yeah, it's amazing it lasted this long, and that was partly because of the guaranteed money in his contract and partly because teams are so desperate at quarterback that they try to convince themselves into anything, and another team will do that for Cutler this offseason. I don't think he'll have any shortage of suitors. If RG3 can get a halfway decent contract in a week one starting job.
RG3 didn't have a lot of suitors.
Uh-oh, here we go.
That's true. Jay Cutler will, though. I mean, it won't be great options, won't be great teams, but he'll be a starter somewhere.
Hmm.
No doubt.
No doubt.
What's his paycheck going to be?
$13 million.
Does he have to compete for a job, or does he
might be a get second signed? Second round rookie or rookies with him?
I think he like might that. Have to compete.
Yeah, maybe.
Unlike RG3, who you know certainly flamed out, Jay Cutler has probably 15, previously fired Bears/Broncos assistants around him that were largely burned by Jay Cutler and may not be willing to sign
Most
up.
Most of them
again.
Are out of the league. John Shoup and Mike Martz aren't offering anyone jobs.
Maybe that would be an indicator to stop making excuses for Jay Cutler.
So he'll be quarterback.
He's won
the
one
Jets
playoff next. Game ever.
I really.
I'm not. All I'm
Jets.
Saying is he's going to be a starting quarterback making a lot of money.
He doesn't have a ton of options, by the way, Greg. It's not like
it's
has
early.
10 different teams. Well, you could kind of read the tea leaves on this. How many teams really are looking for Jay Cutler at this point?
Jets maybe.
Jets maybe.
49ers.
Are we sure Carson Palmer's playing football again next year?
I would assume he is.
I would not assume it.
Point is, just it's
49ers,
not like a ton of places.
Jacksonville. Well,
and you can't say the 49ers twice because then it just makes it seem like you have more teams. But it's really
you throw Romo into the mix too. I mean, he could be filling one of those vacancies somewhere.
Maybe whoever doesn't get Romo ends up going with Cutler.
Who was sitting on the bench at Eastern Illinois while Tony Romo was starting quarterback? Bears general manager Ryan Pace. Mm.
I mean, that's going to require – the difference there is that's going to require Romo saying, yes, I want to be a part of it.
I want to go there.
I think the Bears thing is interesting too because all these guys are gone, I would guess. Cutler's going to be gone. Alshon Jeffrey's going to be gone. And based
John
on
Fox
what Ian Rappaport's reporting, our NFL media insider, it sure sounds like John Fox is going to be gone. So it's like another start over.
Big time.
This is not the best news for John Fox, even though he wanted to banish Jay Cutler earlier in the year because he's going to have a harder time saving his job. But for Ryan Pace, it helps you get a better draft pick starting Matt Barkley the rest of the way.
Are we assuming that Ryan Pace has won anyone over? I mean, what's happening?
I think Ryan Pace is – I think he's fine.
Let's move on, gentlemen.
Matt Barkley for 6 games. Give me a break.
Maybe David
this
fails.
This should be like a week or two thing. 6 weeks is a lot of games.
I can't imagine we're going to spend too much time talking about the Bears until the offseason because for all intents and purposes, it's over. But we'll still respect them. We'll talk about them. We do.
I mean,
that
they're going to play 100%. Other teams, and we'll have to watch the games because of the teams that they're playing might matter.
Well, we won't all have to watch them. Someone will be assigned to the Bears on a weekly basis.
Like I said, many times, the old inside the NFL model, every team gets coverage. We don't care how bad you are. Not a ton of coverage.
Well, we're
except
Jets
for the Matt Barkley-led Bears.
Jets and Browns will tell you we don't care how bad you are. They dominate this show.
Well, get your own podcast. You know what I mean? Don't come to me saying there's too much Jets. Go listen to another podcast that the old Zeuser's not on.
Me personally.
Yeah.
Well, no. Any critics?
Huh? Just pointing out, some of the gripes some may have.
Who are you beholden to, Dan?
Not a damn person.
That's right. Otherwise.
All right, let's move on. The Patriots have an offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels, who everyone is in love with again. The proper amount of time has passed where we forgot what happened in Denver, so now he is the hottest name on the head coaching market. And he would like to set the record straight during a Tuesday press conference. This is according to Boston Herald. McDaniels cited recent reports about him outlasting Bill Belichick and taking over in New England, calling them unfounded. And then he had this to say, I definitely would love to be a head coach again. That from CSN New England. Wes, your thoughts on this?
Well, I kind of teased a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to talk about Kyle Shanahan and Josh McDaniels.
Ooh,
humble brag.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, you know all about the Peter principle, that you keep getting promoted until you reach a point where you're basically going to reach a failure point.
Basically,
you're no longer eligible for the role you're going to have.
The four of us.
I like to call it the Tony Kornheiser principle. Back, in the late 90s, he was the best sports radio guy on air. He was good on PTI. And as soon as he went to Monday Night Football, I was like, this is a terrible idea. Why does nobody ever realize their limit, their ceiling? Be satisfied with being the best in the world at what you do. We have in the NFL, we've been taught over
money is the answer.
Okay, that's fine. But happiness means a lot
more than
money
you.
To me.
Ambition bites at the nails of success.
I don't know what that means, but sounds smart.
Think about it.
What I'm saying is we need to rethink the way that we assume that coaches are going to be hired by NFL teams. The top 12 teams in the NFL right now, according to Football Outsiders Offense, not a single head coach calls the plays. So if you hire Kyle Shanahan and Josh McDaniels, are you taking away what they do best?
Right.
And making it a non-factor? What are they qualified to do as head coaches? Mm. They're qualified to call plays and design offenses. I don't know that that makes them great head coaches.
Well, I totally agree. It's a different skill set, which is why I give the Ravens, for instance, credit when they hired John Harbaugh. They saw him and the skill set that he had as a special teams coordinator as a guy who could lead men, who could manage a lot of different divisions, who can make decisions, who can be organized. It's a guy who's organized.
Mike Tomlin is similar with the Steelers.
It's not necessarily just do you have a great offense. Now, with that said, Josh McDaniels has been in the most successful organization. That hasn't worked for other Patriots assistants. I thought Dan Pompey...
Didn't work for him the first time.
Didn't either. But I thought Dan Pompey wrote a great piece about McDaniels this summer. A lot of inside access where McDaniels said all this. So to me, this is not news in the sense that he's out there saying he wants to be a head coach. I think guys can learn from the first time around. There is nothing better than learning from experience.
I think Josh McDaniels, even back during their Super Bowl appearance when we were there with Super Bowl week, and I remember standing near McDaniels talking to reporters, and he explained how he had grown and what he had learned from the Denver experience, which, by the way, was a long time ago. I took him at his word. I think he has.
He was 34.
I would refute the idea that we should stop hiring coordinators to become head coaches, because as often as it fails, and you're right that just hiring the hot name doesn't often lead to success. Bill Belichick was a hot name and one of the best defensive coordinators. Where are you going to hire them from? You're only going to hire linebacking aides and secondary aides?
I'm speaking more to offensive coordinators.
I mean, I get it.
When you keep that job as head coach, you're not as able to concentrate on the rest of the areas that head coaches should be concentrating on.
It's an interesting take on where we should be pulling coaches from, because there's obviously there's a lack of success there. Teams keep going through it. But a bright play caller has also probably learned from multiple head coaches during his tenure. It's not whether or not they're a good play caller, what they're going to do there. Where have they come from? Who have they worked under? What is their overall philosophy? These coaching interviews, if they're done right, you find out about the man and the organizational ability, not just what fans see on Sunday. So it's a much larger question than where they were before, what they were doing.
I knew, Mark, you would pound the table for the coordinators. They're your boys, historically, in a big spot.
I would say.
They're coming to their defense.
But to Wes's point, though, I think it cuts against human instinct to say, I think I'm good enough and I'm not going to keep trying to do more than this. But it's been proven over and over that the hot coordinator is a coin flip.
Right.
And
think of guys, some of the best coordinators in football right now. Rod Marinelli. 0-16 Lions. Wade Phillips, maybe one of the best coordinators of all time. I think you can make the case, you could put him in the Hall of Fame for what he's done as a coordinator. Sometimes that's the best way you're going to be able to help the team.
And this is my point. As a fan of the NFL itself, as a fan of good quality football, I want Kyle Shanahan and Josh McDaniels concentrating on play calling, not running a team.
Well, it's also their offense and their schemes, and you would hope – that's the thing is that when you hire a head coach, I think you want them to bring something to the table. So it's nice when they bring an offensive system to the table. So otherwise, I don't know. What are you hiring?
We all agree McDaniels will have a new job.
I think it depends. I think
if he wants one.
The New England thing is a big factor. He's got a lot of kids, and I'm not sure that he would just move the family to the wrong opportunity.
Right,
it's got to be the right opportunity.
There's two big factors. One, do the Patriots make the Super Bowl? Which is sometimes a big factor. Do teams want to wait? And then, two, which jobs? You know, I wrote about coaches on the hot seat, a little hot butt talk.
Look at you embracing the hot butt.
On this week's debrief, NFL.com/debrief, there might not be a lot of job openings this year.
What if,
on paper, it might be three. You know, it might not be a ton.
I couldn't imagine him refusing, say, a Packers or Colts opportunity with Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers.
Agreed.
If he gets the right job.
Let's move on. Real quickly, one of my favorite quotes of the year from a favorite of the Around the NFL podcast, Steve Smith, speaking to Jenny Vrentes of the Monday Morning Quarterback, had this to say about motivation at age 37 at this stage of his career. There are times when I go out there and play and I look at it like this. Everybody has kids, right? I want my son, if he decides to play, he's playing against the guy who possibly –
I played against his dad, and he could say, my dad beat you like a drum, so I'm going to beat you like a drum. Generational ass whoopings. I look at it like that. Generational ass whoopings. Steve Smith.
Come back again in 2017. John Harbaugh said he's welcome back, absolutely welcome back. Mike Wallace is trying to recruit him to come back for another year. I don't know. I kind of doubt it'll happen, but I'd like to see it.
899-1 this past Sunday.
He's their best receiver.
It's their best offensive player, not named Marshall Yanda.
All right. That's what's happening in the news. Get out your cutlery, boys.
Stick a fork in them.
All right. This is our final time we will convene the Fork Committee. Earlier today, we met downstairs in a conference room. Mark brought coffee. Delicious, Mark.
Sure, thank you.
Greg, you brought lox.
Gross.
That was good.
Well, you need to bring bagels with them.
I brought the bagels.
Like. Okay. Seems weird.
Wes, you brought a lot of muffins, like a surprising amount of muffins.
I love a good nooks and crannies, the English muffin.
You brought English muffins as well. That's right. And we talked about the teams that would be nominated for the fork. And what is the fork, if you're a new listener to the show? When we decide to fork a team, that means they have no chance of making the playoffs. It's over. Go home. Smell you later. Still listen to the show if you're a fan of the team, because you never know what will happen next on the Around the NFL podcast. But your team season is over. Earlier this season, we forked the following teams: the Browns, the 49ers, the Jaguars, the Bears, the Jets, and the Saints. We had a conversation a couple weeks ago. The Saints were the only one that kind of spooked us a little bit, but I'm feeling a little better a couple weeks later.
Yeah, they're 4-6. They're still the only team on that list with any chance to take the fork out, but it's an uphill battle.
So far, so good. But if this exercise is going to be effective at all, we need to, up the numbers a little bit here. Hopefully we could fork another five or so teams and get into double digits. So let me just go down a list. I have in front of me six nominees to be forked here 2 days before Thanksgiving. And why don't we start with an interesting one? The Arizona Cardinals. And this is what we got going on with the Arizona Cardinals.
Former team of ATL.
Former team of ATL, which certainly means something. They are 4-5-1. Their head coach just got out of the hospital. He's been having health problems. They got beat by the Vikings on the road pretty handily, even though the score didn't look like it. And their next four games, nothing easy. At Atlanta, home to Washington, at Miami, home to New Orleans, at Seahawks, at Rams to close the season. Are we ready to say goodbye to Arizona? No chance of making the playoffs, Mark.
Yes, I am. I think, if anything, we're hours away from December on some level. Wes was ready to do this weeks ago, and I was not then. And I would have put them above a bunch of other teams with a chance to climb back in. Not now.
Wes, I'm imagining you still feel the same way about Arizona.
Feel even more emphatic about it, especially with those four tough road games.
Yeah.
Atlanta, Miami, Seattle, L.A. all on the road, and we concentrate a lot on offense and defense in this show. When the Cardinals look back on this season, they can thank their special teams for keeping them out of the playoffs. They have been killed
right
by special teams this year.
Right, they would have been 6-2 going into last week if Cannizzaro hit two of those kicks.
How different is that if he even just makes what was the equivalent of an old extra point against the Seahawks in that 6-6 game?
They don't give up a 104-yard touchdown to Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, but that said, their offense, you have a fatal flaw with your offensive line right now, and that's not going
right.
That stuff doesn't get
that's
fixed
a big
between
problem.
November and the end.
Like Carson Palmer doesn't look good. He's not moving well, and he doesn't seem to be the
nothing
same
wrong with
anymore.
His arm, by the way.
No, he made some good throws last week, but the Cardinals, in their last eight plays last week against the Vikings, or maybe it was 11 plays, that they had chances to try to win the game. Like, they didn't have a single successful snap.
Palmer was getting hit on
every single play. There was either backwards, no gain. It was like, hey, let's try to win a game. No, let's try to get a yard. They couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So fork them.
There's no magic. All right. Cardinals forked.
Yeah, gone.
Next up, Mark Sessler, a team near and dear to you. It's personal. Still not sure how it got personal, but it is personal. The Green Bay Packers. We'll start right there.
Whoa.
I'd be happy to fork the Green Bay Packers. They scare me a little bit. just because I think just what's woven into my memory about who they've been for so long, but they are not that team right now. And you got to get out of your own division, number one, I think, in the NFC North, because there's a lot of teams in the NFC with two or three more wins than them right now.
Here's where they stand. They're 4-6. They've lost four straight. And if you recall, and this is something to think about, even though this is not the same Packers team, they did almost beat Atlanta on the road, lost 33-32, and that kind of put them in a tailspin a little bit here. But this is what they got next. At Eagles, home to Texans, home to Seahawks, at Bears the next month. Wes, where do you stand?
I am not forking the Packers.
Mm.
The Detroit Lions are not a good football team. They're a terrible defense. The Vikings, if I remember correctly, Mark essentially wanted to fork them last week. He said they have no chance of making the playoffs because they were on a four-game losing streak. One win can turn all that around. This is a bad division, and the Packers close against the Vikings and Lions.
Right. That's the key. That's key. And Aaron Rodgers, by the way, has played pretty well the last few weeks. I mean, they still have the best hope of a guy, like, seeing a quarterback dominate. Like, if push came to shove, would I take Rodgers or Stafford the rest of the year? I'd still take Rodgers.
Well, I didn't think I was going to get this done.
I was on the fence.
Utterly bored by the Green Bay Packers.
I think there's
no way around it. I'm tired of assuming that they're going to go 10-6 and go in and get wiped out in the playoffs again. Get some fresh blood in there.
If they don't win in Philadelphia, they are three games back with five to play. So as weak as that division is, that the math is just tough. You're going to have to start winning some surprise games.
I will say, Mark, as a long-term – we're both long-time members of the Fork Committee. Those are kind of two separate things, though, whether you're sick of the team and whether they actually can make the playoffs.
100%. I think they need to go 5-1 down the stretch to be 9-7.
I think 8-8 could take this.
It's a bad division.
I think the other two, one of those other two teams is going to go 3-3 and get to 9-7.
That's fair.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. For now, the Packers are safe.
Good point.
The next team we'll talk about, let's swing over to the AFC, talk about a team close to Chris Wessling's heart, the Cincinnati Bengals. Or they
could not be farther from my heart.
They used to be, but maybe there's something
buried
within, not even that deep, a couple layers into one of the ventricles. West.
There would be no West of us if they weren't close to your heart.
No, there is a West of us because they're so far from my heart that I have glee in their disappointment.
You ever heard of the phrase love and hate, two sides of the same coin?
It's almost like an ex-wife or something. Like, you know, you've been through a lot. You're battered. You almost kind of don't want to see them succeed, or you don't. And yet at the maybe underneath it all, your heart is still a little bit alive.
Right.
It happens all the time in America.
Yeah.
People get divorced and get remarried.
Yeah. I think a lot of times with an ex-wife.
It's like a little night at the motel, something like that. You and the Bengals.
I think a lot of times with an ex-wife, it would be natural to have mixed feelings. It'd be a little unsettling if you were just flat out bemused by their antics, by her antics. Well, that's how my relationship with the Bengals. They're endlessly entertaining to me.
All right. Well, here's where they're at right now. The Bengals are 3-6-1. They have not won since they beat the Browns last month. And
does that count?
It technically counts, but we're not handing out lollipops. Here's what they have coming up: at Ravens, home to Eagles, at Browns, home to Steelers. A lot of division games in there.
I would have forked them before they lost Gio Bernard and AJ Green.
Yeah, that's too
the Giants lost to me was the fork moment.
I'm with you, Greg. I think that looking at that schedule and seeing how many division games they have, I would have said, let's hold off on this. But the A.J. Green loss, and I know he's not having surgery, but their offense, Gio Bernard, that hurts, obviously, but no A.J., no hope.
I don't like these teams that can't protect the quarterback, that have major problems up front, and they're back against the wall, and there's any assumption that they're going to turn it around. The Bengals are cooked.
Wes?
I tried very hard to concoct reasons why the Bengals had a chance to salvage West of us. Can't do it. They're going to be 3-7-1 after they lose at Baltimore, and they will lose at Baltimore. I'm going to have to fork them because of the tie. I could see 8 wins 8-win taking this division, but the tie is going
to
kill
them. I can't see this team winning 8 games without A.J. Green and Gio Bernard.
It's not a good division.
They'll
Greg.
Be lucky to go 2-4 the rest of the
they
way.
Have
they
to
could go 0-3 and they could go 3-12. It wouldn't shock me.
They have to go 5-1 to get to 8 wins. I don't think that's possible. I agree with you. They're much likely to they're more likely to go 5-10-1 than they are to go 8-7-1.
They're more likely it's more likely that they get a top 5 pick than West of us continues at this point. That's
yeah,
how
I agree.
Things have derailed in Cincinnati. So
they gone.
They gone.
Maybe a new coach, too.
Making progress here. You think Marvin's got a hot butt?
I don't think that organization is one that is rooted to constant change. We know that. If anything, people would argue they kept Marvin Lewis for too long.
Marvin Lewis was ready to step away from the team after 2017, put it in writing if they agreed to hire Hugh Jackson at that point. Mike Brown said, I'm not getting involved with that. Which I don't blame him. That's just weird. 2 years is too long in the NFL to do some sort of weird succession plan. But that shows you Marvin Lewis is thinking about, like, I kind of want to get out of here soon.
I think anybody who thinks that Marvin Lewis's butt is hot because the Bengals might fire him has no appreciation for history with the Bengals franchise whatsoever or the way they operate. They're a mom-and-pop organization. They don't operate like the other 31 organizations.
I think what we're saying, though, is not him necessarily being fired.
No, I'm saying –
but him walking away.
Or him going into the front office. Like, I could see him staying there and hiring a coach. Absolutely.
But you guys aren't the only ones. Like, a lot of people are saying Marvin Lewis should be fired or will be fired. I don't think that's the way Mike Brown does business.
I've never met Marvin Lewis. I've seen him at hotel bars at the Super Bowl, but I've never met the man. But if I were him, and I'm saying I'm looking toward the end of the line here, I thought I might have had a Super Bowl team last year. I got banged by an injury bug and then a crazy playoff game. The next year, we had some personnel issues. How about this? We reload a little bit. We get some better playmakers around us. We take another shot of it in 2017. And if it doesn't work then, maybe it's time for me to go. I think he's got one more year.
Yeah, go use your high draft picks and go compete, rebuild that. I mean, they don't even need to rebuild. They've already got a good roster.
I've seen the thought in Cincinnati that it's like, okay, let's fire everyone. Let's start over. This regime's had its run. This window's closed. This team has a lot of good young players. Their nucleus is around. It's not really changing. I don't think their window's closed at all.
You know what Marvin Lewis can bring to you. And you're right about the Browns aren't about to go get rid of someone. But the thing is, if you fire someone, you've got to go find someone better to take his job. And those guys just aren't out there.
Go hire Dave Shula.
No, they're more likely to promote Paul Gunther if they're going to do anything. That's the way Bengals do
it. Well, you've let three head coaches get out of the building. I don't think Paul Gunther at this point looks good after you've got three
after
potential
Zimmer.
Right. Two playoff coaches.
People were talking about Gunther as a head coach prospect last offseason.
I'd rather hire Gunther, the barista from the Friends Coffee Shop.
which I think he's available. You'd have your options if you were somehow put into a front office. Unlikely, though.
I met that Gunther at a Hollywood bar like 7 years ago. He had a pretty high belief in himself.
He doesn't strike me as the charismatic type.
I think he met you. I don't think you met him. I think at this point you've got more going on than Gunther from Friends.
I would like those residual checks though, if he gets any pop on that end. All right, moving on. The Chargers, Greg. This one now. This is near and dear. You were felt very strongly about this team, but they had a bye last week. The week before, just the killer loss at home to the Dolphins. They let that one get away. Phil Rivers threw four interceptions in the fourth quarter, as we know. And here's where they are at 4-6 in a division where everyone seems to be 8-2 or close to it. At Texans, okay. Home to Bucks, at Panthers, home to Raiders, at Browns, home to Chiefs. Now, understand, Greg, I know where you want to go here, but you said yourself last week.
I'm with Greg.
How bad that loss was against Miami. 4-6. Go ahead.
It was tough.
They have to win out.
Got
to
win out.
Look at their schedule. It's conceivable.
It was tough, boy. And they lost Brandon Mebane, which is a big loss for them. They just, every week, another big injury. I don't care. Football's not logical. Their run to the playoffs a couple years ago where they ended up winning the last four games of the season, then winning a playoff game wasn't logical. This team... I like it. I think it's got talent. I'm not giving up on it.
Back the truck up, Greg. You've just attempted to use logic to explain why the rest of the teams we've discussed are in or out, and now logic, because it suits your whims, has no bearing.
And again, he basically told us that the Chargers were done after last week, but now they're back in.
So
I've had a week to calm down and let the emotions die down.
Does this have the DNA of a team that's going to rip off six straight wins?
Yes.
I get that their schedule is not.
Yes.
No, it does not.
I think it does. I think it's – if any – if I was
–
if I was picking a team that is under 500 that would have the – so to for the sake of this exercise, you got to pick a team that's under 500 to kind of come out of nowhere and win
you're
six.
A fanboy.
Yes, this is it because they got some talent.
You're one of those fans that every loss is a fluke and shouldn't have happened. Their longest winning streak this year is 2 games. And now they're going to rip off 5 in a row. Oh, and by the way, and I don't know who's buying it.
Maybe the Chiefs fall apart.
I'm just saying.
A lot of things going wrong with the Chiefs.
They're not going to be a heavy underdog in any of these games. In fact, I would favor them in most of them.
The Chiefs have already beat them once, so that's basically a play-in game for them. They have to beat them there. Well, they got to win all these games. But they also lost to the Dolphins. So if the Dolphins are hanging around at 9 or 10 wins, they lose the tiebreaker there.
Maybe 9 wins gets in. Lots of crazy things happen.
No, they got to have 10 wins. They got to win all 6 of these.
All right, so you guys believe that could happen. That's fine. If you really want to like be that way, I want to be on record, and Mark, I think you as well.
Here's what I'm not going to be doing. I'm not going to be sitting in there on week 17, Sunday night, Al and Chris, watching the Go-Go Chargers get into the playoffs that night on the backs of a Phillip Rivers touchdown to Hunter Henry and be like, why did we fork them? I thought this could happen.
What reality do you live in?
Sydney, can we get the San Diego Superchargers sad piano music queued up for Sunday night?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We have forked two teams so far, the Bengals and Cardinals.
Next,
both are broken teams. I don't think the Chargers are a broken team.
They're not broken, but they're 4-6 in a conference where it's unforgiving and a division as well. Let's move on to the Rams. They survived, though.
Yeah, we got to pick up the pace.
The Rams.
Got 3 games to preview.
We're going to get to it, Greg. Don't worry. We're getting there.
Just want to get Mark out on time, you know.
I am unwilling to leave the show early when we've got a lot to do. Don't waste our – let's continue as we need to, Dan, in this segment. This is important.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. This one shouldn't be too complicated.
No.
The L.A. Rams are 4-6. We all believe they'll probably finish 7-9 or 8-8. At Saints, at Patriots, home to Falcons, at Seahawks. Smell you later, right?
You're gone.
They're not getting to 7 wins.
They'll be lucky to get 6, right?
They're – I love this stat the beat writer from the Rams for ESPN.com sent out. The amount of losses after 10 games for the Rams the last 6 years. 6-6-6-6-6-6. Every year under Jeff Fisher. The exact same year.
He's a metronome from hell.
And I was like, why did they phrase it that weird
Def
way?
Lon
it was
Jeff.
Because 1 year there was a tie, so they were like 3-6.
Well, Jared Goff, you can cite the rain. You can cite a rookie quarterback in his first start. He was a downgrade on Case Keenum. I'm sorry.
Well, it was 1 game.
He was a downgrade. So we expect him in his second career game to be a major upgrade?
No.
You can't do first read and throw it every single time. And that's what he did against the Dolphins. First read every time.
Fork him. Finally. And this one, again, goes to show you. You never know in the NFL. Here we are before Thanksgiving. Carolina Panthers. 4-6 coming up. Oh, man, guys. At Raiders, at Seahawks, home to Chargers, who aren't going to lose again, according to half this room, at Redskins.
I said they could not lose.
Brutals. And then home versus Falcons.
They're done.
Fork them. That schedule's brutal, and we don't know about Luke Kuechly's status.
I would have forked him even if Kuechly and Addison and whoever else they lost in that game that I'm forgetting. Khalil.
Ryan Khalil.
Fork him.
Kuechly is a big loss, and you would assume.
Fork him.
You don't know with the brain stuff, head injuries, how long they'll keep him out, but it could be the next 2 weeks against two of the best teams in the league.
He
right
missed
now.
3 games last year with a concussion.
The Chiefs loss is what really killed him this year. I mean, they would have been in much better shape. Yep. All right. I'm with you.
Any X factors here?
Keep piled out.
What was that, Connor?
Keep piled out.
All right. Here we go. You guys ready? Here are the fork teams for the 2016 season. Wait, I lost track. Hang on.
Carry the one.
Arizona. And who's the last one?
You can leave this
Panthers.
In as long
Panthers.
As Dan doesn't swear.
The Cincinnati Bengals. The Los Angeles Rams. The Arizona Cardinals. The Carolina Panthers.
You keep going, you're going to find that Scottish accent that's been so elusive.
Aye. Haggis.
That's it. And we, that's it for the season. There we go. We have forked nine teams. So, you know, it's 32 teams in the league, minus nine. Yeah, I would have called it the most bold.
It's, I would not. Forking. I would not say that.
Should have been an even 10.
Did we fork the Bucks? Yeah, we might.
They're 5-5. No, we didn't.
Oh.
You want
we didn't
fork
do it? Oh, Greg saved them earlier in the year.
You want me to nominate the $500 for forking?
I don't know.
We're not forking. Game at a first.
We're not forking the Bucks if we didn't fork the Chargers. Come on, that's not fair.
Okay. I hope they make it. They
I'd
got sandwiches,
Bucks.
But I don't feel too good. Okay. We won't. Sorry, okay. Bucks.
Fork those uniforms.
Thanksgiving, three games on the slate, and we'll start with the team of Around the NFL. Oh, such a big win in their building against the Cardinals to break that four-game losing streak. Now 6-4. They control their destiny right now in that division, don't they? They're in first place, right?
Well, if
I don't think any of these teams control their destiny.
If
I mean,
they take this game, they do.
You know what I mean? Just because they're going to have multiple losses. They can't control a week. You know, they don't. They're just trying to get a win.
Each of these teams
had a four-game losing streak.
Okay. They're 6-4. They're in first place.
How dare you, Dan?
In the NFC North. Now they travel to Detroit. So here we are, 2-6-4 teams. But I'll tell you what, Chris Wessling, I feel like things potentially setting up well again for the Vikings. The Lions 6-4, but as we know, have been trailing in the fourth quarter of every game this season. Hardly a juggernaut.
Yeah, I know I'm supposed to respect the Lions. They're a first-place team. I don't respect them. I'm sorry.
But they're fun to watch.
They're fun to watch. They're far more entertaining than they had any reason to hope. But they could have lost all 10 of their games this year easily. I mean, I can't take them seriously. When you're losing every game in the fourth quarter, I can't take you seriously. And the Vikings, I saw the pounding they put on Carson Palmer. The Lions' offensive line is much better than Arizona's, but I still see the Vikings as a stronger of the two teams here.
Well, this is a rematch from just a few weeks ago, which I wish they wouldn't do that. This was the Golden Tate, you know, leg drop of Andrew Sendejo game. And that was a game I believe the Lions really couldn't run the ball at all. You expect that they won't be able to run the ball. Last week we asked on this podcast, Xavier Rhodes, make a play. Everson Griffin, let's see ya. You know, Anthony Barr, let's make a play. And you know what? They did it. They took over that game. All their big-time defensive players took over that game. And to me, their defense should be enough to slow down a Lions offense, which hasn't been as explosive the last few weeks.
I agree. I mean, the Vikings haven't allowed any receiver all year to go over 100 yards. And if you look at Jim Caldwell's tenure in Detroit, he hasn't had a 100-yard rusher since he was hired. And that's
only team in the league over that span.
Sure, it's Colts-like on some level, and I think the factor that it's in Detroit actually is big, because Minnesota to me in Minnesota is just a different team. But Minnesota's defense and their secondary were the difference last week. Their secondary was absolutely fantastic. Had a season high 15 hits on Carson Palmer. I think, Dan, you said this might be a good spot for them. Mm. It might be. And I think if you lose this game and you're Minnesota, I don't know what's happening from here on out. You win it, you're 7-4 on top of a division that is not very good.
Right, because you're essentially two games back if you lose this, because the Lions will have swept you.
Oof, need it.
Got to get it.
Got to have it, need it, and got
to
have it.
Lions need to get a pass rush going a little more consistently. I know one Ezekiel Ansah has proven particularly disappointing to one member of our podcast.
Yeah, it hasn't been a great week for me.
You famously put a sandwich. What was the sandwich that Ziggy Ansah would have 15 sacks?
No,
this
that
year?
He would lead the league. He was third last year.
And how many?
Not a sandwich, Craig.
He doesn't have a
four
single
sandwiches.
Sack, not one.
Zero,
not one.
Zero sacks.
Well,
zero
that's sacks. Part of the reason why the Lions passer rating on defense is 108.5, which would be the third highest since the NFL merger in 1970. Sam Bradford can pass on this team. Hmm. He has a 131 rating on passes over 20 yards. He's going downfield this year. Adam Thielen, good game last week. Cordero Patterson, a unique receiver with that explosiveness and physicality. I think the Vikings passing game is better than if they get protection, they can do something.
It's been a little better since they went to Shurmur.
They're averaging 6 more points a game.
That's what Pat Shurmur does for you. I want to find out. I mean, Stephon Diggs did not practice again today on Tuesday. Time to go before the game, but that would be a major loss for them. I mean, he's your downfield element.
That's the thing. The Lions have more bodies. I mean, they have Tate, they have Ebron, they have Riddick. They have more people.
Notice you didn't mention Marvin Jones, who had 408 yards in his first three games and only 268 in his last 7 combined. What happened to that?
Well, they're using Tate so much more.
Why can't they use both of them? I don't understand why it's been one followed by the other. Some teams would like that challenge.
I'm sure they'd love – they've been trying to get Marvin Jones involved.
I'm guessing he's getting a lot more defensive coverage now.
It hasn't worked. You know who did a good job in this first game? Trey Waynes was all over him, pretty much shut him down in the first time these teams played.
Let's pick this game. I want to check in on something here. Mark, you first.
I'm going to go Vikings.
West.
Vikings.
Great.
Oh, I like it. Team of ATL across the board.
There you go. The Vikings across the board. It's Thanksgiving time now. This is where it gets real. Vikings got to stack up some wins.
Sorry, Patra.
Not humiliate us in a big spot. So let's go, Vikings. Next up, let's talk about, you know, before this little studio came around to the NFC East, the old Zeuser was flying that flag. And I just want to say, I welcome, just like the team of
ATL. In years past.
I welcome you guys on to how fun the NFC East is.
So because you liked the NFC East when they were horribly boring and wretched, you deserve
always
credit
there.
For that?
No, some of us always saw the positive elements of the division and
Wes,
the rivalries.
This is one of those, you know, Dan Hansis narratives that it would be easier for you just to get in line and accept on air.
NFC East is great, guys.
Whatever Dan wants.
I'm just saying, you know. A lesser man might say, oh, now you're going to have some fun with NFC East after you've been bagging on it for years.
That's what analysts do.
Come on board.
Well,
when things are worthy of respect,
saying,
they give it to
you. You essentially just said that to us.
So you're saying some divisions, you know, quality go up and down over time?
Welcome back, guys. Welcome back. That's all I can say. I've been here the whole time keeping the lights on. NFC East battle between the Redskins and the Cowboys at Big D. And I love this. This is the best matchup of the day to me because –
The week.
The Kirk
the
Cousins.
The year!
Well,
the century!
Hold on.
The Kirk Cousins-led Redskins. And Kirk, all right. Yeah, come back to me a little bit.
What?
Yeah.
What come on.
You know, he's airing the ball. What a tremendous game he had on Sunday night. Then he's going up to his GM and dropping catchphrases on his GM. Calm down with that
all
stuff.
Right, that part.
Let's finish the season out.
We got to get that as a sound drop. It wasn't a catchphrase. That was a genuine moment that someone happened to catch on their camera. I love the fact that he's going up to his boss and basically saying, "How you like me now?" Wouldn't you like to do that after a great end-around post? Just like go right into Tom Brady's office and be like, "How you like me now? I just dropped the metrics."
Greg, who now is nobody's boss, can excite himself about these arrangements.
I'm saying
so
it's kind of
confronting
cool
the boss.
Wouldn't that be a cool job to have? You know, that you could just
starting
do that?
Quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, that's sure. What I'm saying. Where you could just drop that on your boss. Give me some money.
Greg confused thousands of listeners. There's a Tom Brady that works here as well.
Oh, that's true.
Not the NFL quarterback.
Famous shadowy league figure, Tom Brady.
Anyway, so Kirk Cousins played out of his mind in poor conditions on Sunday Night Football and bombing the Packers, and now he goes to Dallas, where the Cowboys are obviously beating everybody. They haven't lost a game in like 76 days. They're 9-1. Something's got to give here, Greg Rosenthal. What does?
Well, I would say the Redskins defense, a group which has flummoxed me all year. I'm not sure if they're good, if they're bad, if they're exciting, if they're boring. They're middle of the road. I think what they are is overachieving. I think they've done a good job with what they have, but I don't think they're any match for a team like the Cowboys, who eventually ground down Philadelphia and they ground down Baltimore. They're going to have their way with Washington. There might not be any drives in this game, though, now that I think of it. I mean, Two teams that just hold the ball in these long drives, maybe that makes it a close game.
I don't need to sell this game to Mark Sessler, who is about to have a footballgasm when these two teams take the field.
Ew.
As much as you have liked these two teams over the past
that's a good point.
6 weeks or so, but I'm going to sell it anyway. These are the two best Redskins and Cowboys teams of the 21st century.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't even think – this is the best Cowboys team, and this is the best Redskins team.
I think you can certainly debate that about the Cowboys in their 2007.
You love their 2000. What was it? Their 13-3 2017.
It was a good team. They had a better defense, I would say, maybe then, and just about as good an offense.
The Cowboys are number 5 in scoring defense this year. They're number 3 in rushing defense. They have gone 8 straight games over 400 yards on offense. Something only been done by the 2013 Broncos and 2007 Patriots. This is a well-rounded team, and they've never won 8 straight games in a regular season before. This team is doing things the Cowboys have never done, and the Redskins are on pace to set franchise records in yards, passing yards, and yards per play.
I mean, the Cowboys are built in a way that this is their time of year. You want to talk about a team, it's one of the few teams in the league that says, come at us, try to stop Ezekiel Elliott, try to stop us from running 13, 14, 15 play drives that take 9 minutes
off
the clock.
It's not all Ezekiel Elliott. That 8-minute drive or 7-minute drive last week to close out the game was not all Ezekiel Elliott. It was Dak, and it was Dez Bryant and Cole Beasley and Jason Witten and Terrence Williams.
My concern in this game, if you're Dallas, and I think they're going to win the game, but Mo Claiborne, Barry Church, both out potentially, looks like they will be, and you're looking at a Redskins offense that doesn't need 8 minutes to score. They are – Kirk Cousins was dropping dimes last week. Huge plays, and they are connecting on big plays. Jamison Crowder, 3 100-yard games in the last 4 weeks. If one guy's out, the next guy steps in for the Washington.
And seeing Garcon go deep was a good sign for them. You're right. They have expanded their offense, whereas now they get big plays, and those were not there until about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's crazy, Wes. I'm trying to think of a Redskins team – you might be right that this team is better than any Redskins.
There's not much to pick from the Redskins.
I mean, the RG3 year, they were solid. They were.
I think the year that Brunell was their quarterback, Clinton Portis was still in his prime, and Santana Moss was still in his prime.
That's a 10-6 team that loses in the first round.
Right. This team, I think, is better and more explosive.
I think there is a recipe for them to win here, which is just that, you know, there's 3 or 4 drives per team per half, and that Washington's offense is good enough to just keep scoring every drive. And, you know, it's 23-20, 6 minutes left in the fourth. You know, they forced Cowboys to kick a couple field goals. They got a chance.
Ezekiel Elliott's second worst day came against the Redskins, but I would argue that was in week 2 before the real Ezekiel Elliott emerged.
I agree. And not much would surprise me about this game. One of the few things that would surprise me is if the Redskins shut down Ezekiel Elliott.
What's crazy to think back to week 2, because I would have never guessed that these teams would have been this good in week 2. I would have thought these teams are kind of mediocre teams.
I mean, they're
at best. The Redskins were
weren't this good in week 2.
You guys all got the Cowboys here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think this is the week they're going to hit a speed bump. Washington's going to pick them off on Thanksgiving.
I like that. That's nice.
You going to lock it up? No, I'm just kidding. That would be a crazy one to lock
That's
up.
That's a little too
it
crazy
would,
to lock.
It would fit your definition of lock.
Well, you got to be truly confident. I'm not that confident about it. I just feel that. Okay. You don't understand the segment, Wes.
I don't.
When you figure it out, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Finally, Pittsburgh travels to Indianapolis. This is the NBC Thursday night affair. And this one took – we had a bit of a back and forth in the newsroom on Sunday about whether this game was good or not. And Greg got very excited and animated and explained, oh, this is your chance to see two of the great quarterbacks of the generation. Oh, only now we find out that one of them, Andrew Luck, probably is not going to play because he has a concussion. And that leaves us with Ben Roethlisberger against
Scott Tolzien. Scott Tolzien.
And I can't get excited about this game.
Nor should you.
No, that ruins it.
I mean, in Greg's defense, I think that the Big Ben Andrew Luck game from a couple years ago was the most exciting game I've seen
in
my life.
They're two of my favorite 5 or 6 quarterbacks.
Greg went
to
off
watch.
On David Ealy. About this. It got really personal.
Why David Ealy?
He was saying it was not that great a game. I'm like, that's a good game. Actually, I don't care what the records
exactly
are.
What
and
happened
they're both
was,
in the playoff mix.
Ealy and I were talking about the game, and Greg was kind of slumped at his computer working. And then out of nowhere, Greg just starts firing shots at Ealy. Like, you know, basically telling him he doesn't know what he's talking about. It was fun. Fun
this
news.
It's like boss heat?
It was a little former boss against current boss.
Ooh, I like that. That's
marking
not true.
Territory?
That's just me being maybe comfortable. You know, I like to
making other people comfortable.
Make my
while
opinions
you're at
known.
So the Steelers, who need this game, obviously, in the worst way, get just a massive break. And, you know, teams get lucky sometimes. So they should be able to take care of business, right?
I mean, for those of us who believe that Andrew Luck carries a horrendously weak roster, we're going to get to see if that's, you know, how much of that is true. Can Scott Tolzien do anything against a mediocre Steelers defense?
I mean, we haven't We haven't seen Tolzien since, you know, 2013, essentially.
If you would have told me that he was out of football since 1998, I would have believed you. I thought that name was like he graduated from, you know, Tulsa back in 1990. It would not have been something that
he was like amazing. A preteen in 98, but fair enough. I mean, but it's Andrew Luck who, despite taking the sacks he does and his ability to throw under pressure, they've allowed 35 sacks. That's the most on any single quarterback in the league. And I know that we don't like Pittsburgh's pass rush. It's not our favorite in the league, but they cranked it up against Cleveland last week. Maybe they're starting to come into their own. 8 sacks, and they were disruptive. And James Harrison, who I'm convinced is not a human being, is still playing well.
They knocked Kessler out of the game and hit Josh McCown harder than they hit Cody Kessler. Hmm. They body rocked several quarterbacks for the Browns and several other players. This whole defense was hitting.
Well, it's a chance for them to get some momentum because you would think they would have a positive game on the turf. It's a shame for everyone at, you know, Indianapolis never had a Thanksgiving night game before, probably won't again for another 10, 15 years. This was going to be a cool thing. And the Colts were showing signs. I mean, we bang on the whole rest of the team here, but they beat the Packers fairly convincingly. They beat the Titans, who we love, twice. Their defense made some plays, shut down DeMarco Murray last week. I mean, that Clayton Gethers play to essentially win the game was his second game-winning play of the year. They're playing better. Eric Walden, he's been a punching bag as a signing, and he's had a pretty good year for them. Got like 8 sacks.
Nice try.
He's been okay.
If the quarterback holds the ball long enough, Walden will eventually get
there. He's been okay. Robert Mathis, who's been a disaster really for them until the last couple weeks, is showing some signs.
Is a Curtis Painter level crisis for the Colts right now.
Here's a little stat from the research packet, Dan.
Ooh, I like that.
Teams that are 6-5 make the playoffs 46% of the time. Teams that are 5-6 make the playoffs 13% of the time. Big game in Indy.
There you go. Great work, everybody. You know, I was just trying to do some research, trying to figure out who was playing halftime at Ford Field. This is the 5-year anniversary of Nickelback playing.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Show that
it's
led
not
to
an anniversary.
Grocery.
How many people beyond you are marking the anniversary of that?
Who greenlighted that disaster?
There was an actual protest, and I remember we weren't allowed to write about it because it became such a touchy issue around the Detroit Lions. I can't find anything to tell me who will be playing this year, but I found an article, an MTV article from 2001. The headline, here's the lead. There's one more thing Creed fans can be thankful for this Thanksgiving. Not only will Creed's new album Weather drop 2 days prior to Turkey Day, Scott Stapp, Mark Tremonti, and Scott Phillips will be part of the halftime festivities of the annual Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving game. Greg, what a whoop in the society. You got Creed bombed.
I was wondering, you know, during our conversation of that last game, why you were tuned out more than usual. Now I know.
I don't care about Scott Tolzien football.
You're reading about Creed.
Yeah. Well, that was 2001. I don't know who's playing on Thursday.
Time better spent than Scott Tolzien discussions.
All right. We will be back tomorrow, Wednesday, with a different week, of course, Thanksgiving here in the States. We'll be previewing the rest of the Week 12 games. So make sure you come back and listen to us again. Or, you know, keep it, save it, have it downloaded. And then after Thanksgiving, when you're, relaxing, hopefully you're off on Friday, fire up the old Around the NFL podcast preview special for week 12. I don't know. Do whatever you want. I don't care. Save our Sydney. Or don't. I don't care. I care. I want you to.
I would prefer that you do.
But we prefer you do. This is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm. The mailman, the boss, and La Cid behind the glass till Wednesday.
Generally lean straight up. Yep. Cool.
Banging on my posture in a big spot?
Guy just had a baby.
Yeah, bro.
I mean,
he didn't have a baby.
I'm saying he sort of did.